I think the United States is trying to reconfigure global trade rules so that they do protect U.S. interests.
Asia struggles to stay ahead on trade. It's Monday, November 5th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, ASEAN's traditional topics muted at upcoming summit. Reviving coral reefs with robots. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The massive free trade pact known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership is scheduled to come into force by year's end on December 30th, with six of the original 11 nations under the banner Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. The pact once included the United States until President Donald Trump, just days in office, pulled out in January 2017. Stephen Nagy, Senior Associate Professor in Politics and International Studies at the International Christian University in Tokyo, tells VOA's Victor Beatty this is not out of step with the current trend toward trade protectionism.
No, the Comprehensive Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership is a very important trade deal that focuses on protecting intellectual property rights, reducing and trying to eliminate the role of state-owned enterprises in interfering in market economies. It prioritizes very strong environmental and labor laws. All of these are priorities, not just for the members that have signed the TPP, but the United States, if you've looked at how it's engaged in the new NAFTA 2.0 deal, many of these have been these principles have been adopted. So the United States is not engaged in protectionists. I think the United States is trying to reconfigure global trade rules so that they do protect U.S. interests, but also it pushes back against some of the economic and trade practices by the Chinese that really infringe upon intellectual property rights and those other areas that I mentioned.
Without the U.S., will this trade regime be enough to deal with China and some of its practices?
Well, the trade regime has been what we call an open agreement. So there will be additional members joining, for example, Thailand, perhaps the U.K., which will increase its economic weight, and it will create a block of countries that's prioritizing intellectual property rights and limiting the role of state-owned enterprises. Importantly, the way this deal has been repackaged, the chapters that included the United States have been pulled out in such a way that they could allow for the United States to come in the future in some kind of reconfigured way. Examining the NAFTA 2.0 agreement really gives us an understanding that the United States also values intellectual property rights protection, preventing the transfers of technologies to non-market-oriented economies, and preventing state-owned enterprises from interfering in the market economy. And as such, I think that there's actually a lot more parallels in the NAFTA 2.0 agreement and this new TPP agreement than usually acknowledged.
Stephen Nagy said the current trade tensions have much to do with reform needed to repair the outmoded World Trade Organization rules that worked when China first joined the WTO, but its economy is now so large those rules no longer apply. The five other members who have yet to ratify the CPTPP include Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, Peru, and Vietnam. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Pompeo resuming nuclear talks with North Korea this week. New Caledonia voters reject independence. Myanmar by-election results a lesson for Suu Kyi's party. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the VOAnews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Asian Americans are the fastest growing minority group in the United States and are growing in force both as voters and candidates for the midterm elections coming up in just over a day. VOA Asia's Anna Cook spoke with Sono Shah, a researcher at AAPI Data, which publishes demographic data and policy research on Asian Americans. Shah explains the key findings of the research on Asian American voters and how they are likely to vote during the midterms.
We fielded a survey of Asian American registered voters as part of work with AAPI Data. And there's a number of you know, things that have come out in terms of differences from the previous midterm elections. And see, voter enthusiasm is slightly increased relative to last year. It does look like most Asian Americans are leaning towards Democrats when you ask them about the horse race in the House or the Senate. In general, presidential approval ratings for Donald Trump tend to be on the negative end, the low end.
Are there more Asian American candidates running for Congress this year than any other years?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. In 2010, we estimated about 16 candidates were running for Congress. That number in 2018 is up to 32. So it's definitely an increase, double the number we've seen in 2010.
So do you think that is what accounted for the voter enthusiasm that's increased this year among Asian Americans?
It's hard to say. I mean, but it's a possibility for sure. I mean, given such a dramatic increase in just where, Asian American candidates are running, it's possible that that's why. Typically we see, the states with large AAPI populations like California, New York, New Jersey, having AAPI candidates running. But now, you're seeing them across the country in places where ordinarily you wouldn't see APIs running. So that, that probably does play a role to some extent.
Do you see that Asian American candidates are, trying to target a wider population instead of trying to target an Asian American population?
Yeah, they kind of have to if they want to be competitive. I mean, that's one difference you notice when you're thinking about the success or the viability of Asian American candidates compared to African American candidates or Latino candidates. A lot of times those candidates come from majority minority districts where Latinos or African Americans make up a majority of the electorate in that district. With Asian Americans, it's a lot different, right? Most Asian Americans are dispersed throughout the United States, so they don't make up a majority anywhere. So kind of by necessity, when Asian American candidates run for office, they have to kind of appeal to a wider electorate. They can't just rely on the Asian American vote to get them elected into office.
This midterm vote Tuesday may have major political implications in the United States. Sono Shah, a voting data researcher, speaking with VOA Asia's Anna Cook. Asian leaders will be meeting at the U.S.-ASEAN Summit and East Asia Summit in Singapore November 15th. Despite evidence of rising authoritarianism, human rights violations, and regression of democracy in the region, these issues won't be high on the agenda. What is causing this trend, and why is the Trump administration largely silent on it? White House correspondent Patty Whitaker-Swara has this report.
Brutal anti-drugs campaign in the Philippines. A Cambodian opposition figure placed under house arrest. The Thai junta leader aiming for another term as prime minister. And the Vietnamese Communist Party leader taking over as president, amassing power not seen in decades.
There's definitely an increasing trend toward authoritarianism and a significant decrease in freedom in Southeast Asia.
Minorities are under attack, including the Rohingyas, targets of the Burmese military crackdown. Even in normally stable Indonesia, a Christian governor is jailed under a blasphemy law. Some analysts say it reflects a global rise in the politics of fear and division.
A lot of politicians are leaning on those easy ways to whip up support. I think it's playing with fire in every context, and that would be true in the United States and Europe, and that's true in Southeast Asia.
Another factor is the lack of regional pressure to improve human rights, as ASEAN has long held to the principle of non-interference among its members. Analysts also point out to China, which is expanding its influence in the region.
As they do that, they're exporting their own values. And it's a little bit terrifying in light of the fact that China is committing unbelievable, serious human rights violations against its own people.
Over the past decade, China has stepped up trade and investment through its Belt and Road Initiative, nurturing close ties to Southeast Asian elites.
And in some cases, supporting, potentially supporting corruption and things like that. And I think the countries in the region really have to figure out how they handle large amounts of Chinese investment and ensure they're keeping up international standards and protecting the rights of local people.
China denies accusations of abusing human rights and supporting corruption. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has been less willing than its predecessors to call out other countries for their shortcomings.
The United States will not tell you how to live or work or worship.
Throughout his 2017 five-nation trip in Asia, President Donald Trump focused on trade, terrorism, and North Korea's nuclear program, but hardly mentioned human rights.
My sense is that in the overall foreign policy of the Trump administration, that human rights does not have a very high position. So it's not just in the Indo-Pacific region. It is in many places.
The White House disagrees.
We promote human rights all over the world.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence will be traveling to Singapore in mid-November, where he is expected to highlight U.S. military and economic commitments to the region. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Coming up, robotic protection for coral reefs. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia, an Australian nun who angered the Philippine president by joining anti-government protests used her final hours in the country to call on Filipinos to unite and fight human rights abuses. Sister Patricia Ann Fox left the Philippines for Australia after her missionary visa was downgraded to a temporary visitor's visa, which expired Saturday. VOA Asia Facebook never expires. Visit. As VOA Asia continues, for the first time, an underwater robot is to be used to plant baby coral to parts of Australia's Great Barrier Reef damaged by mass bleaching. Scientists plan to collect hundreds of millions of coral spawn off the Queensland city of Cairns in the coming weeks, from Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Most coral reproduce through spawning, where eggs and sperm are pushed into the water at the same time. In northern Australia, researchers are preparing to harvest this mass release of coral spawn on the Great Barrier Reef. They'll be reared into baby corals in floating enclosures. Then they'll be delivered as so-called larval clouds to Vlasov Reef, about an hour's sailing from Cairns, by a semi-autonomous robot. Professor Peter Harrison, the director of the Marine Ecology Research Centre at Southern Cross University, says science is giving nature a helping hand.
What we're trying to do now is to compensate for the loss of corals that would normally provide enough larvae for the system to naturally heal.
Large areas of Australia's Great Barrier Reef have been damaged by severe bleaching, or loss of the algae that gives coral its colour. The bleaching is caused by rising water temperatures and made worse by climate change. The experiment on Vlasov Reef, which was badly affected by the mass bleaching, will be coordinated by divers, who will guide the spawn-spreading robot, known as the Larval Bot. Professor Matthew Dunbabin is from the Queensland University of Technology.
In future projects, we're hoping that we can start to do that more autonomously, but this is very new and we're up against the clock in terms of trying to get this in the field as quick as possible to make sure that we can have a reef to preserve.
A coral reef is made up of millions of tiny animals called coral polyps. The reefs are critical ecosystems and provide a home for at least a quarter of all marine species. The Great Barrier Reef is about the same size as Italy or Japan. 30 species of whales, dolphins and porpoises have been recorded along the reef. It faces a range of threats, from climate change and overfishing to the runoff of pollution from farms to coral-eating crown-of-thorn starfish. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online on iTunes and SoundCloud, also on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio. Many great radio stations throughout Asia carry our program, including Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone who tuned in today. Our program comes to you through the hard work of many great people like Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Aiden Utku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.